Hey, y'all, welcome back to Erase the State. Matty K is here. Mikey Two Names is back. And we have two very special guests. Justin, you may know him as Whiskey Pryors on Twitter, and the one and only Professor De La Paz. What's up, gentlemen?
Hello.
Sorry, I turned my mic off so I could be quiet. I'm here.
Classic.
Hi.
Classic. It's already off to a good start. Good to have him. Dex, you're doing good, man. This is like your third fucking appearance on this show. Again, you remain our most interviewed guest.
You know, it's an honor. It really is. I love being here. I love the circuit, as it were.
Yeah, the anarcho-libertarian podcast circuit with less than 75 listeners. It's perfect.
Hey, whoa.
Okay, maybe 85. All right, so, Paz, we asked you here, and Mikey and I are just going to try and hang on, because Justin came to me a few evenings ago, right? And he brought up a topic that he wanted to discuss, which I know very little about. The topic is going to be, and this is going to be in the fagcast mode of like conspiracy court, right? So I don't know if we're going to decide anything or if I'm going to have a ruling on anything, but I want your best arguments. So so the topic is nukes.
Does someone have to take the affirmative?
Fuck it. I don't give a shit. Nukes.
Are this is a real? Non-binding court. This is arbitration, okay?
Yes. So is nuclear power, are nuclear weapons, is nuclear energy real? I think Mr. Pryors contends that it's not?
No.
So tell me how you came to this. I think this was an Owen Benjamin thing, right?
Well, it's, yes. Okay, so the Bear went on Dave Smith's show and made Dave Smith kind of go, I don't know about that. Let's move on. Right? But it was something that I had only heard like a couple of times in passing. And the first thing I thought of was pause.
That's why you're here, Dex.
Because if we're going to have a discussion about this, we have to first establish that science is both what? Pause.
Fake and gay.
Boom! Thank you. That's correct. So I hear him say this that maybe nuclear energy exists, but there's no such thing as a quick fission reaction, and that there's and look, doing minimal Googling, I was like, people can't actually believe that nukes aren't real, and then of course there's all the other conspiracies out there, but I'm this is a thing. Like, and just looking around a bit, they're talking. I mean, it's people are like really, really getting into this nukes aren't real thing. And I of all the little conspiracy theories, this isn't even a maybe for me. Like, I'm pretty sure they're real.
So before we jump too far into this, yeah, I would contend that that's an accurate statement. Like, I also think that nukes are real.
Christ.
Broadly speaking.
I'll say they're real. I'm curious about the fallout. Like, people that never left Chernobyl, right? They don't have like hands growing out of their head and shit. So like I could see them being exaggerated, right? Like, you see what's the fallout in Nagasaki and Hiroshima? Is every single person in that city dying of cancer to this day? Because they say fallout lasts however many decades. So I can see that side of the conspiracy. I really don't know about them not being nukes at all.
Yeah, and as much as I've, you know, and caveat, right? The bulk of my recent conspiracy research, if you want to call it that, has been moon landing. So but in all of the YouTube rabbit holes that I've gone down, I've not found the nukes aren't real tab to click on. And the first time I heard about that was on Owen's show like a year ago. So Paz,
I thought it was a joke.
Well, I thought it was too at first, but I don't know. I mean, I know Paz has some brave browser tabs open. So what you got, man?
He's laughing already.
So I'd just like to throw out there that my first exposure to this particular school of theory was none other than Douglas Dietrich.
Oh, I was hoping you weren't going to pull him up, man.
What? You're not ready for some of the triple D? Or?
No. I definitely want the triple D, but I'm. But I'm.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know. Oh my goodness.
So this is perfect, right? So if he's involved, I'm dubious of the theory, right? But I'm kind of glad he's involved because now you get to teach Justin all about him. So let's start with that.
So I was only bringing that up because, like I said, he was the first person I ever heard just personally advance this theory at all. And for a little perspective, he is one of the truly great batshit conspiracy theorists out there. It's pretty remarkable. You know, he is a former Coast to Coast AM guest. He's done several presentations on the conspiracy circuit, I guess. There's DVD copies of them available. They're also free on YouTube. And he hosts 6-hour long live streams on YouTube where he just rants and rants and rants. It's pretty remarkable. But he really cut his teeth on World War II alt history because he claims to have worked for a Department of Defense library where he was responsible for incinerating old documentation. So that's kind of his shtick, and he's got a lot of stories. Above top secret stuff about Soviet vampire breeding programs or the truth about how Japan won World War II. You know, various and sundry.
So it's just throwing shit against the wall and see what sticks?
No, it's all true. Japan won World War II. Just listen to him.
Okay, so where does he get involved with this nuclear energy, nuclear bomb falsification theory?
I have never heard him directly talk about this, but in the context, he was saying nuclear weapons couldn't possibly have been used against Japan because the damage patterns for Hiroshima and Nagasaki were the same as firebombing campaigns in Dresden. And that I later found out, doing research for this appearance, seems to be a pretty common theme in the nuke denial field. You know, it had to have been firebombing because it looks like firebombing.
Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
No, that's where that thought was going to stay until we decide how we really want to approach this. It seems like that's the first vein everyone hits is, oh, the damage patterns don't look right from the only example we have of their use or alleged use.
So,
as these people would say.
So then what are the damage patterns? What were the Dresden damage patterns, and what are the expected damage patterns from a nuclear bomb? This is where I'm leaning on your expertise, Paz.
Yeah, so I'd well, have also, to say, first so of know, all, I'm not exactly a nuclear engineer, right? So honestly, I wouldn't know. But frankly, I find the whole thing a little far-fetched too. You know, I can talk to you about what these people think, but the idea that nuclear energy isn't real is pretty far-fetched for me, too.
Yeah, I guess just, you know, tell me what that, in your extensive research that you've done in preparation for this.
Yeah.
What do they purport to be the inconsistencies with the damage patterns?
Well, maybe a better way to go about this would be to pull up one of the tabs I came across in my research, and for the record, I used DuckDuckGo, not Brave, not Google, not any of that other stuff. I went to DuckDuckGo.
Attaboy.
And I found this fascinating link to a website called biglies.org, which is part of nukelies.org.
It already.
And I found this substantial post from 2011. Which is a repost of a forum from 2005 to 2007. And it is a 20-item list examining all of the reasons why nuclear weapons couldn't possibly be real.
Okay, so let's...
Now, I would not... I wouldn't suggest that we go through them in order or anything or necessarily talk about all of them because 4 or 5 of them are just virulent anti-Semitism that has no actual bearing on the topic.
Well, so I was going to say, let's at least mention the list, and then we can kind of, I'll let you drive, right? So you can when you get to point, you know, 88 or whatever, you can just say, this is spurious. Let's not even discuss this.
Yeah.
So take us down from the top. Like let's go through it till we get to one that we want to talk about.
All right. So this one is actually pretty interesting, and I've got no way to either prove or disprove it, but I think it's definitely worth talking about because it feels like it's probably one of their pantheon arguments.
The Jews.
Well, yes, but not this one. Item one, the historical seismographs of Hiroshima and Nagasaki have mysteriously vanished. If not only for the sake of war-era memorabilia, that information should have been everywhere in the museums and in the press. Hiroshima is located in a highly volcanic zone called the Honshu Arc, and those active volcanoes were under constant seismographic surveillance during that period and long before. The so-called atomic blast at Hiroshima was estimated to be the equivalent of 6.2 on the Richter scale, but no seismological outpost in the world appears to have noted it. The Russians said they exploded the biggest atomic bomb ever made, 50 megatons, at Novaya Zemlya in northern Russia. That is hundreds of thousands of times more powerful than what they said exploded over Hiroshima. Yet again, not one seismic needle moved at all. How is that possible, I ask?
That is
item one.
So, was there any seismographic data from the testing of Fat Man and Little Boy?
I did not Google to verify whether there was any seismographic data from those tests.
Justin, get
but,
on
it. You know what? Yeah, search that right now.
So
that would also lead me to ask whether those records could be retroactively faked or fabricated, though.
Well, I'm sure given enough time, money, and power, anything can be faked, right? It is the government we're talking about.
But if that's the case, why wouldn't they also fabricate records from those bombings over Japan?
Sure.
And, you know, again, we don't know if that data is actually out there, but this guy's purporting it's not. And it seems like he has a vested interest in it not being out there.
Right.
And so would probably have searched for it. But
well, and so my only thought on this, though, is that if I remember correctly, the way that the bombs were used is that they were not detonated on the ground. They were detonated in the air.
Correct. They were airborne detonations. So, that's something that they'll touch on as we get down the list.
Too. So that's my first thought is how much of that blast would even register if these things were not in contact with the ground or buried or anything like that, right? So I know we claim that we see, you know, North Korea testing nukes, right? But these things are buried when they test them. So of course we can see that, right? Because it's making contact with the ground. So there's going to be
seismographic records of whatever they're doing.
Right. So
because that's purportedly how they know they're doing it at all, between moles and then seismographic confirmation.
But right. So if this is, you know, if it's being detonated, I don't know, like a mile in the air or whatever, how much of that would translate to a seismographic needle, however many, you know, miles away from the site? That's my thought.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. And, you know, I'd be skeptical of that, too. Mm-hmm. How is it going to shake the Earth itself if it's never hitting the Earth, no matter how much force is generated?
Sure. So, Justin, you got anything over there?
No, I'm can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'm searching the Trinity site stuff and White Sands and all that. And they don't say anything about seismic data. It's all about how much radiation is left there and how much radiation is left, you know, outside of Vegas and all these different places where they tested them. And that, which is, you know, I think Paz is probably going to get to it, but that's another one that they talk about how people are still living in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and still living in Las Vegas. And none of them have, like Mikey said, none of them are growing feet out of their heads or anything like that. So that's kind of all I'm seeing. Like the only seismic stuff I see is kind of like, way later on, you know, after underground tests began and stuff.
Yeah. So, well, and then also, I mean, you know, but just speaking of the Russian side of things here, I mean, was there even seismic? I don't even know if we were measuring that then, but like when the Tunguska event happened, I know that was like allegedly seen and heard and felt, you know, hundreds of miles away, right? But did that,
yeah, but that hit the ground?
That didn't hit the ground either, right? So that's my only data point, is they believe it was a comet. Well, allegedly it was a comet, right? Wow. That detonated at some point above some distance above the Earth. So if there was something there, then at least we have a data point that says that an object exploded in the sky can cause a vibration on a seismic device.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know, in all my expertise, I watched this on Mythbusters.
Oh, so what you got? What'd they do?
No, they were talking about how seismic waves traverse and then go from solids to liquids and go through different mediums. And they were stating that, you know, if you're on land, you and say you're 100 feet away from a bomb that goes off, you'll feel X amount of damage. But if you're underwater and that bomb goes off underwater with you, you could be double the distance and be killed because seismic waves can travel through water quicker and faster, you know, kind of like fast and high frequency sound waves. And then they did it where they did a bomb blowing up above the water with a person under the water, and that actually had the least amount of concussion, because when the shockwaves went from air and then tried to transfer through the water, it almost created like a barrier. So just interesting.
Yeah, and that makes sense too. I mean, that's just a density issue, right? So
exactly.
Air is less dense than water, so the waves are going to travel less far or with less intensity through air than it would be underwater. So, but I'm a chemical engineer, I'm a mechanical engineer, so fuck do I know. But not a civil engineer, so. All right, so you want to go to the next one,
or what it's worth,
else on this one?
I've got one more thing. I did a little looking. He claims that there was no data on Tsar Bomba, the Soviet test. I was just Googling around quick on my phone. I didn't bother going to DuckDuckGo. But apparently, sources from 1961 claim that they did have a 5.0 register on the Richter scale after the Tsar Bomba detonation. So, you know, maybe the data is actually out there somewhere.
Okay. Well, and here is, and this is from science.nasa.gov. Title of the article is "The Tunguska Impact 100 Years Later." This is from 2008, June 30th. Down in the article buried, it says the massive explosion packed a wallop. The resulting seismic shock wave registered with sensitive barometers. Well, that's barometers as far away as England. So barometers, not a seismic meter. So that's all I got there. Which, again, like I said, this was 1908, so I'm not sure if we were even
measuring. Well, I believe seismic tech, the Richter scale, has been around that long, though, hasn't it? Because
I don't know.
Used to measure the Great San Francisco earthquake, I believe.
Okay.
But doesn't proximity come into play there, right?
Sure.
You don't know exactly where it's, you know, where a bomb is set off, and your Richter scale is X amount of miles away, they're all going to measure different, right? So maybe it does have a, you know, five registers a five on the Richter scale. The Richter scale is placed, you know, a mile away from it rather than thousands of miles away.
Yeah, it's just like the LSU Auburn game. Not to bring it back to that every time, but the LSU Auburn game.
Go Tigers!
Go Tigers! They call the earthquake game, right? So there's a scale right outside of Tiger Stadium, and the stadium got loud. Someone happened to be watching it that night, and now it's lore forever. So I think it is a distance thing for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so, for what it's worth, the Richter scale was developed in 1935. I just looked it up.
Gotcha. Okay, so I can go either way on this one. We can move to the next one. I'm a little dubious, but...
Yeah, claims of no seismic data being taken, to be determined, I suppose.
All right, so let's move on down the list.
Let's see. Item number
two. I like these shows with us doing lists. This is fun. I like this.
Listicles, it feels very organized.
Which is highly irregular for this show.
I wouldn't call it well organized. I'm just looking at some dude's bullet point ravings. But in 1942, Hitler's Luftwaffe had a plan to bomb Lower Manhattan in New York City, USA. This plan included a special transport behemoth to fly the package across the Atlantic and deliver it to the target. This is fully 3 years before Hiroshima, yet the so-called atom bomb they said they were using is the exact yield and deployed at the same height as the one they say they dropped on Hiroshima. This suggests to me that the atomic hoaxsters were shopping for a spot to nest the hoax. What other possible explanation can there be? When the U.S. started using what they call atom bombs, they used uranium hammer configurations. But the Hitler model is not specific at that level. So what is Hitler doing planning atom bomb attacks before he even had the facilities or infrastructure to even start planning such late strategies? They never said what they would replace that bomb with if it fell into the ocean with the plane. Why would he not have delivered the package by boat instead? How do we explain these contradictions?
Wait, so they're saying that Hitler had a nuke, or Hitler had the same?
So the assertion here, bomb? The assertion here seems to be that Hitler had a war plan to nuke Lower Manhattan.
And so they're just hoping that it never gets uncovered that maybe he had a nuclear program?
No, the assertion seems to be that Hitler was designing a nuke the same size as the one they would use at Hiroshima and wanted to drop it on Manhattan. And this dude is wondering why they didn't just bring the atom bomb over in a boat.
That's why didn't we?
Well, how do we explain these contradictions? That's his question. That's what he's wondering, man. Why didn't we use a boat?
I mean, early detection. Boats move a lot fucking slower than planes do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Justin, you're the aviation enthusiast. Can you outrun a boat?
Oh, absolutely. I think part of it is that they may have had an idea that it was possible, because all of the German scientists had either just left Germany or were still in Germany, and they're the ones that kind of came over and helped us develop the damn thing in the first place. So maybe he knew it was possible and he was looking at places to first strike kind of deal.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, that's pretty easily explained to me.
Well, and pause, this might fall, sort of a little closer to your bailiwick here, but so I know this was not, this predates, paperclip or whatever, but how many German scientists came over? Was there a mass exodus at the start of the war to the United States? Did we utilize German talent and knowledge as part of our nuclear program?
Yeah, certainly. I'm not sure, or rather, I wouldn't say it was to the scale of paperclip and what would happen after the war, but there was definitely already active programs recruiting their talent as Hitler was chasing them away in the 30s.
Okay.
That was definitely already a thing.
So, and I mean,
though, the Soviets got plenty of it too, much like with paperclip. It wasn't all funneled here.
Right. Well, and I, there was, this is sort of next to anything that we're talking about, right? It's a little bit askew, but I don't know if you guys have seen, was it Oliver Stone's series, The Untold History of the United States or whatever?
That was a Stone production, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like the whole assertion, right, on the our nuclear program was really like when we were buddying up to Uncle Joe, right, in Russia, it was just to kind of prove to them like, hey, we're about to fuck everybody else. Like, this is how powerful this thing is. So we know you guys know how to do this, but we've already done it, so please don't now try to get your hands on some.
Yeah, and I'm a little skeptical of a lot of Stone's work because he's a worthless fucking red, but, I think is a very good point.
Well, that's how we act with every new technology. I mean, as soon as everyone else develops the reliable drones, we're going to have a big convention on how you're supposed to use drones. But until then, free for all, right?
Let's bomb some weddings.
We just walked around the earth with our big nuke dick swinging for about 10 years, and the Russians blew one up, and we said, okay, hang on a second, we need to talk about this.
Right.
So,
well, that's actually going to be a later assertion on further down the list. If we had a monopoly for any period of time, why didn't they use more of them? Because they didn't actually have them, because they didn't exist, obviously. But, we'll get to that.
Okay, so on this one, I'm still... This is in the dubious column for me. I still planes
still
are better than
cucking. You're not sold yet.
No, I'm not sold. Planes are better than boats for attacks. We have early warning systems. How fast could the fastest boat that could carry that bomb travel? 30 knots?
Maybe.
You know, like, still dubious. Let's proceed.
All right, we're going to skip item 3 here and move straight to item number 4.
Out of curiosity, what was 3?
Just talking about a certain dispensation of a certain people.
Dude, why do conspiracies and anti-Semitism go like hand in hand?
You know, that is
the question.
Really,
some would call it the Jewish
question,
Mikey.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people who wonder how or why. But I, for one, I literally just won't touch that subject at all. That's just, as far as I'm concerned, that's the thing that's actually radioactive in conspiracy. Just
yeah, I'm laughing because the whole thing is hilarious, Pod.
Yeah.
It's circular logic at every turn.
Right.
Right? So anyone that might subscribe to that is listening to this, and they're going to say, see how quickly and naturally Mikey landed on the right answer?
Yeah, exactly.
Or see how quick the rest of them cucked out to Zion?
Yeah. They know. They don't even talk about it. They don't even mention the Jews. That's why it's them.
Right.
All right, so proceed to the next point.
Yeah, point number 4. During the so-called billion-dollar East Coast of the United States blackout, a good portion of that area was completely without power. How is this possible when so many so-called nuclear reactors were supposed to have autonomy? How is it possible that people can shell out $5 billion to build a reactor and it can't light a light bulb when the grid goes down? My contention is that the reason the power failure is so absolute is because the conventional sources are fueling the hoax reactors. Who would build a distribution grid for electricity like a superhighway that clogs when two cars collide on a country road? Nobody would design a grid where a reactor can't support its customers when the other grid elements are compromised. I say this is further evidence of the hoax. How can it be otherwise?
I'm going to go with what the fuck he's talking about.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with just straight incompetence by our government who came and fixed fucking potholes. So I'm not going to trust them with power and nuclear reactors.
That's why Texas is not part of the larger, you know, whatever national grid, right? Like, we have ERCOT in Texas, and they manage only power distribution in Texas. We are not tied in to other states. And it's for that reason. And we still have issues sometimes. It's rare, but we'll have, you know, rolling brownouts at times, like maybe every decade, like we'll have it like one time for a month, right?
That's just not how grids are built.
Right. And it's for that reason, right? It's just you can't support you know, 330 fucking million people, however many goddamn square acres that is, or however many square miles that is. Like, it's you can't do it. The math problem is too hard. The engineering is too difficult. I would say it can't be done. And then once you throw the government in the mix, like, the whole thing is fucked from the get-go. So this is another, I venture to say, straw man argument. Like, this is just...
Absolutely it is. I mean, you need conventional power to power parts of a reactor. That is true. But, you know, if a power outage causes those conventional portions to fail, then the reactor's going to fail with it.
Right.
Right? That's how that shit works.
Well, and it's not like the...
Unless it was powering itself and the rest of the grid, that's a ridiculous argument.
Yeah, and it's not like the nuclear reactor is some magical technology, right? Like, when they use it for power generation, it's the same technology. They just heat the water differently. So in a coal-fired power plant, you pulverize the coal, you make coal dust, you burn it. That heat goes to make steam. That steam drives a turbine. Same thing for a natural gas plant. The natural gas is burned. It creates steam, which drives a turbine. Same thing for a nuke. They raise or lower the rods in the water bath. It heats the water, creates steam, drives a turbine, which drives the generator. Just like, you know, wind energy, just like dams. Same thing. You're spinning a turbine, driving a generator. So to say that, oh my God, we have this magical nuclear energy, surely it should have, you know, created enough energy to power the grid in the blackout. Well, you're still relying on mechanical means of power generation.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, literally everything is steam powered.
Yeah, it's all steam powered. Sorry, Justin, go ahead.
So I would say this guy isn't really making an argument, in at least in this one, to people that know what the hell they're talking about. He's just trying to gain more followers toward this movement. Because if you know anything about how it works, you would say, how many people know that a nuclear power plant is just a steam engine by another means, right? How many people know that?
People.
Yeah, they think it's unicorns in there, and it's just and it can do everything. Why do we even have any other kind of source of power?
Right.
And the answer to everything he just said is, when the entire load of the system falls on the plant, guess what? Its breaker trips too to save itself, and it's a self-contained unit, and it keeps itself from melting down till the whole grid comes back up, and it's only designed to handle a certain amount of megawatts, et cetera, et cetera. And that's it. It's just a big breaker, just like the rest of your house. If you stick a fork in a light socket, the big breaker is going to go, bro. Like, sorry. Like, that's just the way it's going to work. And it doesn't matter. And I think this guy, and this is the second time I've kind of heard this, he seems like he's fallen into his own trap, right? Because later on they'll tell you, and I apologize, Matt, but a lot of the moon guys will tell you
that
one of the worst things that could have happened, even if it's true, is that we went to the moon. Because same thing with the nukes that they're talking about now. He said, you spent $6 billion, as if that amount of money magically makes something happen.
Yeah.
Right. So and that's the problem. OK, we've been conditioned to think that, oh, well, government can just throw unlimited amounts of money at something and fix a problem. I think that screws up his little circular logic, because he just referenced it in his argument. And later on, they'll tell you that, oh, this is fake and it's just a way to spend money.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it's, you know, like money's money and things cost things. Right. And like for nukes, we are on, I think, the third generation of nuclear power plant designs, whatever they call that. It's all heavily regulated by the government. There's all these, you know, energy councils that come together and decide what the new generation is going to look like. And they've been discussing this for, I don't know, the better part of 10 years, I think, since I got into the valve industry I'm going to fucking dox myself. But when I first got into the valve world, it was like 2012. Yeah, so we're better part of 10 years now. And they were still discussing, like, the next step in nuclear technology, right? So all this stuff is heavily regulated. And we all know what happens when you have regulations. It's just fucking money. It's all a money grab. It's all pay to play. So if you're telling me you spend, I don't give a fuck, $100 billion to build a plant, that money means nothing to me on the efficiency of the plant or its ability to handle loads larger than it was designed for. That's the thing, right?
Like, you. That's you. Most people hear that amount of money and they go, oh, well, obviously someone knows what they're doing. When that's exactly that's the opposite of the
case. Exactly. It's 180 degrees the opposite direction there. You spent $6 billion? Fuck, man. You have no idea what you're doing. That's what I think. So, all right. Well, here's another one that I am highly dubious of. Anybody got anything else, or should we proceed?
Yeah, I've got nothing more to say on it.
All right. Let's keep going.
I like how we're destroying a conspiracy on the conspiracy court. That's
great. Yeah,
the only time this has happened that where none of us believe this shit.
That's true. And I'll believe anything. At least for 5 minutes.
So are we ready for item five here, folks?
Bring it.
The mushroom cloud thermodynamics of the atom bomb hoax have also been examined. The first problem the competent examiner notices with the mushroom cloud photographed on the day Hiroshima was attacked is that the sun is shining brightly overhead at the noon position. The bombing was said to have been at 8:15 a.m. I have heard it argued that this was the Nagasaki cloud, but it has been used by the hoaxers themselves for Hiroshima. And here's a name drop this dude drags in here for reasons I still don't understand. And Justin Raimondo had this exact cloud for his essay, Hiroshima Mauna Loa. I went to the public library in downtown Montreal as a youth, and I looked at microfilm of newspapers that day in 1945, and the picture I enlarged, taken from the microfilm, was the cloud at noon, and it was in Hiroshima indeed. So evidence of a hoax?
So
he's basically asserting that by a newspaper using the wrong picture of the same event, it's a hoax.
I don't even want to talk about this. I got nothing. I mean, you can't just say that newspapers just, by their nature, and reporters, and you know, I love Justin Raimondo, whatever. RIP to the homie. But
like, yeah, absolutely.
But that's part of their job, right? I'm sure if he's writing about something that he would include that photo in, like it's, he's trying to evoke a certain response, an emotional response from his audience. And of course, he's just going to pick, hey, let's, you know, Google search, you know, mushroom cloud, mushrooms, right? Oh, that looks like a good one. Let's use that one. That's what the media does every fucking hour of every day, just to evoke.
Yeah.
I mean, we just saw that they were using, what was the footage from fucking South Carolina, Kentucky, whatever shooting fire range, right? Yeah. To mimic the fighting in Syria or whatever. It's like, dude,
oh yeah,
come the fuck on. Like this is everyday shit. Like, yeah, it's bad. But does it prove a conspiracy? No.
Well, it proves conspiracy, but not any conspiracy in particular.
Not a nuclear conspiracy.
Yet. But
it also, you know, to what Mikey was talking about, proves just incompetence across the board.
Sure. So
we're still not buying it.
I'm not buying it. My money's still in my pocket.
Mainly because I'm ready for my recreational nukes.
All right, well, let's try point six then. And this is where we start to get into some of the firebombing stuff.
All right.
Item number six, the firebombing of Tokyo, March 9th and 10th, 1945, 100,000 dead. M69 aimable cluster firebombs reduced 26 square kilometers of that city to ash using a few hundred U.S. Air Force B-29 bombers. Aside the cost of the aircraft when initially built, the cost of destroying all that section of Tokyo was little more than $1 million. So why build anything that costs billions to destroy a fraction of the land those B-29 bombers could have destroyed in under less than $1 million? That's some sloppy writing. Because the atom bomb was a lie, and those cities reduced to ash by M69 firebombs, and that also explains the mysterious vanishing of the historical seismographs of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Are they hiding the fact that there was no shockwave?
So, first, M69, nice.
Yes, M69.
So we used firebombs against Tokyo because this was not modern Tokyo with skyscrapers that rival New York City. This was old Tokyo, which was built out of bamboo and wood.
And Bible paper.
Yeah, so we firebombed it because we wanted it all to burn, because we were fucking assholes. Second, we had developed the... this was like Trump using the fucking mother of all bombs, the bunker buster, whatever that motherfucker was, right? It's like, did we need to use that in an application? No. But we had it in our fucking tool belt, and we hadn't used it yet. So this was a great place to showcase it and show the other countries around the world what we're capable of. Same thing with the atom bombs. We had a couple in our fucking holster, and this was a great showcase to use it to show how we could dominate an enemy, A, and B, prove to Uncle Joe Stalin that, hey, we're cozy right now, but if you try and get all uppity, we're going to fuck you up too. Because we have this, you don't. So, here you go. That's where I'm at on this. And I want this to be a conspiracy, but he's starting to piss me off.
Make better arguments.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Wait, that was item number six.
Okay.
If we get through 10 and you're still not feeling it, we can stop it there. Because I think the 1 through 10 are really to the point that you can call any of them credible. They're the best arguments because he's at least trying to make a point with them.
But see,
after 10 is when
it
gets into a...
He's already trying to tie in previous arguments, and he's not even to 10 yet, right? So it's... Okay. Yeah, let's proceed that way. So give me the next one.
Let's just... We'll get through 10 and then see if we're ready to call that at least. Item number 7. This is a shorter one than the rest of them. Hiroshima was not evacuated, and life came back to normal very quickly. This is inconsistent with the models presented by the experts that said nothing would grow for 70 years and nobody would live there for a very long time. 1 week after the so-called atom bomb, oleanders were growing everywhere. The hoaxers started stories of a miracle. More contradiction and nonsense from the redacted.
Wait, did he? What did he redact?
No, I redacted it because I said I wasn't going to touch
how many,
it.
How many O's were in the G's? As I don't know if you guys have video on, but Justin just slowly faded away into the background on that. He was laughing so hard. Okay, so this is one that I find actually really interesting, and I don't know anything about it, so I'm hoping somebody else has some on the fly research ready to go, because I've heard this before, right? That we burned a bunch of people up, and when the bomb dropped, their shadows were burned into the concrete, but life kind of continued, and you would think that after
that's different though. That's a whole different conspiracy, right? I would take that one out because I will chase you down that rabbit hole all day because I do agree with that one when it comes to the radiation and, if you've ever watched Chernobyl on Netflix even, that's just wild how everyone's lives went right back to normal. So I will chase that rabbit hole. I will go down that rabbit hole. I do think that is something to dive into. But you can also look at that as completely different than the actual bomb itself, right? I mean, because the guy's also trying to use that to say that the A-bomb doesn't exist. I'm like, all right, bro, that ain't working for me.
Yeah, but, just because we don't necessarily understand how radiation works doesn't mean you can't build an A-bomb.
Exactly.
Right. And this to me is this should be the crux of his argument, right? Like this should be point 20. If we're saying that the A-bomb doesn't exist, and here's why. This should be the smoking gun. If this is true, this should be the smoking gun. And I have questions. This is one that I don't know. And I'm trying to, do a little searching over here, but what do you guys think?
Well, I can go ahead, Justin.
I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
This is the one that if you play your cards right, and you're that guy, is the most convincing to me, to get you to go, maybe, and that's the one that Big Bear was yelling about the most, that, hey, look, people are still living right outside of Vegas. They're still doing their shows, and there's, you can still visit the Trinity site, and you can visit all of these places that tested multiple nukes, and you're fine, right? And like Mikey was saying, the life grew outside of Chernobyl. People just can't really live there long term because I don't think it's about hey, you're exposed to that much radiation and you're definitely going to have a problem. It's if enough people are exposed for a long enough time, you're going to have issues, right? That kind of thing. And it may be that it was overestimated. It may be that we don't understand how the Earth deals with that much radioactivity and how easily it can clean it up. I remember the BP oil spill. They said basically Louisiana and South Texas was going to be uninhabitable for for years and years, and the beaches are going to be destroyed. And 6 months later, it's fine. It's gone. So I don't know.
It's a great way for a power grab, right? If you can ever use something that people don't understand to grab power away or use as a fear tactic, the government does it every single time, and the BP oil spill was one of them. So this could have just been a scare tactic that was way overused, way exaggerated. Like you said, we don't know the half-life of this radiation or how it absorbs the atmosphere and into the ground and into the rainwater and all that stuff. So I see this as more as it was overly exaggerated, but also used to the government. It was just something that they wanted to use as a fear-mongering.
Yeah, they put platoons of troops out there watching the bombs explode during the testing. You remember that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously either they were legit evil and testing it on their own people, or they didn't think it was that much of a problem. It could be a little bit of both.
Yeah. So I have a brief aside, and then I want to drop some on the fly research on you. So since you mentioned the Macondo accident, right? We've all seen the movie, right? What's it called? The movie about the explosion on the drilling rig?
No, I never watched it.
Okay, well, you should watch it. Well, actually, you shouldn't watch it because I'm highly triggered every time I hear John Malkovich try and half-ass fake a Cajun accent. It's terrible. So,
so what movie is this?
It's Deepwater Horizon is the name of the movie.
Yes. Oh, I still haven't seen that.
Yeah, just don't think a Cajun ever talks like John Malkovich, please. He sounds fucking retarded.
Okay. Copy that.
Because he has to like slow everything down to make it work. It's really bad. So anyway, so this is on CEBU Daily News. CEBU Daily News, CDN. So a little bit down the article, it says, as of 2015, the population of Hiroshima was 1.5 million. And Nagasaki, just shy of 430,000. Both are thriving metropolises today, vibrant, booming, with millions of tourists visiting from around the world. Levels of radiation. The radioactive particles from the atomic bomb 72 years ago were supposed to render both cities uninhabitable for thousands and millions of years. Here's a quote. Today, the background radiation in Hiroshima and Nagasaki is the same as the average amount of natural radiation present anywhere on the Earth. It is not enough to affect human health, according to scientific reports. But why? What happened? Why are these two cities in Japan safe again so soon? Uranium-235 was used for the bomb over Hiroshima and plutonium-239 over Nagasaki. The half-life of U-235 is 700 million years. The plutonium-239 is 24,000 years. If they had reached and exploded on the ground... This is a fucked up article. Okay. Information from the Hiroshima and Nagasaki Peace Museums provided the answer to the mystery. Both bombs exploded high up in the air, so here's this answer. 1,968 feet for Hiroshima and 1,800 feet for Nagasaki. They never hit the ground. The 139 pounds of U-235 and the 12 pounds of plutonium-239 were pulverized into particles and the plume dissipated by wind over land and mostly to the sea. So, that's one take, right? It says data show that there was only a slight increase of leukemia in Nagasaki, but there were no added incidents of cancer in and around Hiroshima. An amazing feat of luck. So I guess the what scientists are saying here is that because the bombs were exploded in the sky, everything was sort of just, it stayed in the sky. So what did the damage was just the blast wave and heat. So anything that would have been remotely dangerous was pulverized, sent back skyward, and then winds carried it out to sea. So there's an answer.
Yeah, and that's kind of the common argument, is that the destruction of the atmosphere didn't allow anything to linger because it all vacuum effect or some bullshit, you know, and got swept away. And, you know, I actually find that explanation pretty compelling. I don't know a lot about atmosphere physics, but it makes sense for me that it all floated into the air and is dissipated that way.
Yeah,
For what it's worth, I've got a little other research that might be applicable here.
Go ahead.
You know, I've done some reading on other atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons as a possible correlation to the vast increase in cancer rates in the mid-20th century, because all that shit was just up floating around in the air, in the atmosphere.
Right.
And that's why cancer spiked globally, until they then banned atmospheric testing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that lends credence to this particular argument we're making, that it was in fact just swept up into the atmosphere. You know, contributed to the spike everywhere else, but if the radioactive material didn't stay there, then obviously you can't find it there.
Well, pause, that's how a Geiger counter is made, right? So right. They have to go, the Geiger counters were made from steel that was, you have to go underwater to World War One ships, cut the steel off, and compare the non-irradiated steel to steel, to metals or whatever produced post all the nuclear testing, right? So all that steel, like if you smelt iron today, there's going to be enough radioactivity in it to where there's a non-zero amount that won't really work for a Geiger counter. But but prior to World War II, all the ships that were sunk that were made of steel, all that stuff is good to use as a comparator in the machine, right? So that makes total sense to me.
I'm on board.
Yeah, so I'd say safe enough to say this is also debunked, because the bombs never hit the ground and didn't force anything down into the ground.
Yeah, you know, and like you said,
maybe it's possible that this, I think it is possible. I just want to say that this radiation could have lingered and absolutely ruined shit if it had been put into the ground, because you don't just lose particles of the dirt up into the sky willy-nilly, especially if it's drove down in. And, you know, that's what you see at places like Trinity, where part of the desert was just glassed by a test.
Right.
You know,
right.
Allegedly for the purposes of this episode.
Yeah, and I, you know, with this, like, I'm still, there's still, like, a lingering little question in the back of my mind. Like, how can there be no fallout, right? But it's, I accept the explanation that the radioactive material has dissipated. And when you consider, like, we're not talking about millions of pounds of shit being dumped on a city, right? Like, we're talking about, look, I'll give you 139 pounds of uranium, right? But we're talking about 12 pounds of plutonium. That's it. 12 pounds.
Burning at thousands and thousands of degrees. And what does heat do?
Yeah. Rising. It was 1,800 feet in the sky when it exploded. 12 pounds. Everything was sent in all directions, but the heat from would have come back from the ground to aid in its disbursement with convection. I've got to imagine, right? So heat rises.
Yeah, you'd think.
So you've got 12 pounds worth of dust being pushed skyward, and then that gets carried off out to sea. So that's why
the Russians didn't build any bombs bigger than the Tsar Bomba, and the one they did build was just a test, right?
Right. Right.
Because after when it's such a certain size, you lose energy up instead of out, and it doesn't matter anymore.
Sure. So I would call this one not thoroughly debunked, but I'm in the debunk camp. What you got?
I'm sorry. Pause. What number are we on, man?
That was seven, right?
That was seven. I'd like to do 9 and 10 if you guys still have time.
Oh, was eight a Jew question?
It was yet another.
Yeah. Give us the good ones.
Yeah. So, you know, just for anyone keeping score at home, that makes 3 of the first 10 we've skipped, and it only ramps up after 10.
30%. I like it.
he gets more belligerent.
It really does. I'll drop you guys the link real quick to this in the Skype chat so you can take a look at it too here. Perfect.
Oh, please do, because I think I found it already, and like one of the threads, like 5 threads down, is like, I want everyone to know this is not an anti-Semitic forum. That's like thread 4.
That's so funny. Look, guys, I'm not trying to be racist, but the Jews.
Right, exactly.
Listen, it might be circular logic, but if you look at a double helix from the top, it looks like a circle.
All right. So item number 9. Items said to be radioactive have in fact been doped with X-ray radiation for periods of time corresponding to hoax expectations. At the Pantex assembly plant, 17 miles northeast of Amarillo, Texas, they have a very powerful X-ray machine they say they use to look inside decommissioned so-called atom bombs before they open them up. That is totally ridiculous, because why would anything be wrong inside a bomb watched by the military night and day? I say the X-ray machine is there to dope the materials they assemble so that the X-ray detectors they call rad meters can read something expected from the mathematical models. When a rad meter is picking up X radiation, it is seamlessly and logarithmically converting the sampled energy and reporting the results as rads instead of X-ray energy that it is. When a student examines a sample said to be radioactive, it is a sample irradiated prior using a high-intensity X-ray machine. Again, compartmentalization plays a key role here at the Pantex plant. Coincidentally, they are the only plant in the U.S. authorized to make the final assemblies of so-called nuclear bombs. What else could they be using that huge X-ray machine at Pantex if it is not to create illusions of atomic radioactivity?
The way he words shit is just so poorly.
Yeah, it's hard to read.
So I'm highly triggered by his use of X-ray energy. That's called fucking radiation.
Well, and I think but he's
radiation isn't real.
As he's clearly explained through the first 10 points.
I think he's got his types of radiation mixed up, right? So, I mean, plutonium is gamma radiation, and there's other, I'm just simple Google search. I don't think an X radiation is the same thing, right? So they're looking inside the bomb to make sure it hasn't deteriorated is what they're doing. Like, it's pretty, I mean, the same thing they do to your luggage at the airport. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't see this one's easy for me. Like, I think that's all BS. And look, if you're going to try to convince somebody of something and you're trying to be scientific about it and not fake and gay, you should like try not to reinforce your point at every turn. Like when he says the so-called atom bomb, just say they're looking at bombs in here, and I think what they're really doing is right. Just don't say so-called, because you're pushing so hard that now you're trying too hard. You're try hard, and I don't believe you anymore. Like
I'm with you on that.
All right, so we're still not buying it. We still think nukes are real. Let me add just one more point here, and then we'll decide how we want to proceed. But
which
item
point?
10.
Okay.
Item 10. This one's a real fucking gem.
Before we get to 10, I just want to point out, I'm reading this list, and item 11 just says, the Jewish question, period. I love it.
They faked the dinosaurs too, it would appear, is the end of that one.
Yes, that's right. It's so awesome. So, sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to go ahead and read item 10 for the listeners who are not looking at the list with us. Einstein, the plagiarist. At least a few links provided at my Hiroshima thread deal with the question of Einstein's honesty in claiming the authorship of a lot of his predecessors' work. Some say his wife was more the mathematical genius and coached him a lot. Anyways, the original and official story of the creation of the so-called atom bomb says that Einstein gave the letter he wrote to the President of the United States to a financier in New York that bounced it around town for a week before giving it to the president. This was a letter explaining in terms a president could understand that atom bombs can be made. The story says that everyone was paranoid that Hitler would discover the plan to build a bomb, yet they let the letter concerning its so-called feasibility float around town for a week. More contradiction. That's not contradiction. That's just human behavior, right?
Yeah, and it's not like they dropped this motherfucker in the mail. You
right.
know what I mean?
It's a hand-delivered system. Yeah. He's going to show it to people.
Right, right. I mean, whatever motherfucker had it is probably like traveling by train or some. It's, you know, like, it's like float around town for a week. Get the fuck out of here with that motherfucking bullshit. Like,
really fun part of this is the assertion that it was actually Einstein's wife the whole time.
as if women can do science.
Science isn't even real, let alone women doable.
Since it requires the gay.
Yes. I feel like we're not really doing the topic. Maybe we are doing the topic justice. I don't know. But based on this motherfucker's list, like I'm out. Like, nukes are real, man. We burn them up with the nukes. Like, that's what happened. Sorry.
I've got seven other tabs open with articles, but this is supposedly the granddaddy of nuclear denialism, and it's pretty garbage.
Well, and once we finish beating this dead horse, I do have one question for you, but like we can finish on this.
So he screws up the timeline, either like doesn't know it or it's on purpose, right? Einstein was used to give credibility to the idea that we need to spend money and do this.
Right.
Right. Other people determined in Chicago, I forget exactly where, but I remember it being in Chicago.
It was at the University of Chicago.
Okay. Yeah. They found that if you put enough nuclear material together, it begins creating a lot of energy. And then they said, okay, now if we can purify this, we know how much of that can create a fission reaction that will cause the bomb. They sent that to Einstein. And he goes, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And they said, hey, can you please like be our marketing guy since your relativity thing is so famous? And he said, yeah, sure, I'll do that. Like that's he didn't make the bomb.
Right.
No, of course he didn't.
So, I mean, it doesn't matter in the long run.
Yeah.
Well, right. I just really wanted that one read into the episode because, like I said, I just found it hilarious. Well, you know, I thought that was the funniest damn thing I've read in weeks.
Again, this one is like, it's just another, I don't know if this was a straw man, but it's just a spurious argument. Like Justin said, you know, Einstein didn't create the bomb. Einstein just signed off on the data that they presented him with. And he said, yeah, that'll work. Right? Wasn't it fucking J. Allen Hynek or some other person that was involved in this? Like,
it was not Hynek. It was Oppenheimer. I think
there you go. That's right. Oppenheimer.
Hynek is someone else.
Yeah, sorry. I'm getting my conspiracies mixed up here.
Hynek's the UFO swamp gas guy.
Well, I was close. But it's just this is another one that's. I mean, his top 10 are weak as fuck. So, gentlemen, I'm basically
11 through 16 is all Jew stuff, so you know, blaming Israel for it all essentially. Yes. But going down to point 19, he does try to talk about mushroom clouds again. I don't know if you guys are into that or if we're ready to just be done with this guy.
Well, let's do 19 then. If you think it's interesting, I think it's interesting.
Well, I don't know about interesting, but it is one more stab at trying to make an argument.
Okay.
My assumption is he's trying to bring in the chemtrail people. So let's do this.
Yeah. Unlike nukes, chemtrails are real, though. They're two totally different discussions. Item 19, then. Mushroom clouds do not grow out of radial airburst explosions. The mushroom cloud needs to be seeded from the ground. The thermodynamic conditions caused by a circumferential airburst explosion would superheat the air all around and send radial shockwaves emanating from the center outwards like the popular festivity fireworks, and that would negate the conditions required for a mushroom cloud to grow normally. A mushroom cloud grows from the ground up in a predictable circular pattern that develops and flows through a relatively cool and stable upper air mass because the explosion was at ground level. Who can deny that mushroom clouds can't grow out of radial airburst explosions? A lot of double negatives going on.
Yeah.
A lot of double negatives.
I'd like to deny that because look, these things are, 2,000 feet in the air? That's half a mile at most. It's relative to how tall was the fucking mushroom cloud? Like, several miles high? Like, this is... this is science for stupid people. Like, if you go to elementary school and you tell kids this, they go, yeah, that makes sense because you're saying a bunch of shit I don't fucking understand. Him saying that the thermodynamic conditions caused by a circumferential airburst explosion would superheat the air all around and send radial shockwaves emanating from the center outwards, right? Okay, that's science fiction bullshit. Like, that's what we say happens in a vacuum when spaceships in Star Wars explode. The air would still be superheated if it's at ground level. Like, it's just... There you go. The cloud went to 60,000 feet. Boom. Get the fuck out of here with that motherfucking bullshit. I don't buy it. I think he's done a little bit less research than I have, and I did effectively zero. And he's just trying to make a name for himself and put an argument out there. And I think he hates the Jews no matter what he says. And it's all a big ploy to pin this on some people from a desert half a world away.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's really the root of, like I said, that is allegedly the granddaddy of nuke denialism, too. You know, he wrote all that stuff in 05 and 07. And the repost I found was from 11. So for the better part of two decades, that thread has supposedly been the resource for this entire conspiracy, and it's just not. It's not convincing at any level.
Yeah.
I did have some other articles. I don't want to read them or get too into the weeds with them, but something that I did find interesting, though, was the failures of India's atomic weapons program to actually affect an atomic explosion.
Okay.
And I will link you guys this article in the chat, too. I don't know if you guys want to give it a quick read or even talk about it, but I just found it interesting.
Well, if you've read it, you can hit the high notes.
Well, I already kind of really summed it up. It's just, it's from Hindu.com.
Of course it is.
It was originally published in 2009, updated in 2016 of all times. But yeah, it's just discussing about how India's nuclear weapons program was able to make some pretty big booms, but they weren't actually able to affect a nuclear detonation. And, you know, that seems to me or sounds to me like it's just a weapons program in development. You know, I'm not sure why that's a persuasive argument to anyone, but, you know, interesting nonetheless.
Well, and again, I mean, this is kind of anecdotal from my end, right? But this was a problem that we had to work out when we were developing the bomb, right? Like the like two halves of a uranium or plutonium core, this is as far as I know, right, are placed into a tube effectively. When they're triggered, they slam towards each other. The resulting masses hitting each other because they're so dense causes fission reaction. There's a careful calculation that has to be worked out to determine the right velocity these things have to hit each other. It's not just throw a bunch of shit in a pot, stir it, turn the heat on, and see what happens. You know what I mean? Like it's hard work to get complex engineering calculations right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm with you. This is just a development program.
So what was your one other thing?
Me?
What do you mean?
You, Maddie.
Yeah, so one of the things that Big Bear talks about, and I know nothing about this, although I think I have heard some of this, like, you know, across the years, right? But so this is an article from libertariannews.org from 2012. It says, man eats uranium, drinks and swims in reactor water, ignites plutonium in his bare hand.
And dies of leukemia. I think he really did.
Surprise ending.
Oh, shit.
I felt so bad now. What's that? Did we lose Mikey?
Oh no, I feel bad now. They're laughing.
Oh no, it's fine. Fuck him. So I'm just read a little piece of this here. It says Galen Windsor is a nuclear physicist of renown who worked at and helped design nuclear power plants in Hanford, Washington, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Morris, Illinois, San Jose, California, Wilmington, New Jersey. Among his positions of expertise, he was in charge of measuring and controlling the nuclear fuel inventory and storage. Galen Windsor has traveled and lectured all over America, spoken on national talk radio, and made several videos exposing the misunderstood issues of nuclear radiation. He shows that fear of radiation has been exaggerated to scare people, so a few powerful people can maintain total control of the world's most valuable power resource. So, I don't know. I think this is the guy who, yeah, he eats uranium, right? So, like, this is what Owen Benjamin talks about and goes, yeah, this dude fucking eats it, right? So it's all fake. Is it possible that the levels of radiation generated in nuclear power plants just aren't as high as they would be in like a bomb or any other setting? That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, or you know, what if latent radiation is lower in naturally occurring uranium?
Right.
You know,
right.
Did anyone ever fucking stop to think?
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm in the nuclear power is real camp.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think like a lot of other conspiracies, this one makes a far better meme and a far better way to put people off balance than it does an actual argument.
Sure.
And
sure.
I think there is absolutely a place for that because I am willing to entertain some extremely ridiculous ideas. Yeah. And even if I'm not entertaining those ideas, that doesn't mean I don't have them in my rhetorical toolbox, you know?
Sure, sure.
You can totally drop this on someone as totally outlandish, but if you can say it with a straight face, that's how you open the door to other more reasonable ones. You sure. know, it's a rhetorical tool.
So, since do we all still have time?
Yeah, I'm good to go for a while. I just didn't know what you guys were doing.
And we can make this relatively quick, but Since you had this in your rhetorical toolbox, and this could lead to other paths down conspiracy rabbit holes, Paz, you mentioned that you believe that chemtrails are real. I'd like to learn more.
Yeah, no, I was just clowning. I don't believe in chemtrails.
He was joking.
Yeah, that one should have come across as a joke. I'm sorry if
it I wanted to get into that just for Justin's sake.
What, is he a chemtrail believer?
No, he's not.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that there's a million more efficient ways to poison the nation at large than trying to dump chemicals into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about water fluoridization, you know, maybe there might be something to that. But the idea that it's being dumped in the upper atmosphere is pretty absurd.
No, I do appreciate the fact that people are like thinking a little bit outside the box, right?
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. government is literally poisoning us. You know, we have declassified records talking about them dumping nuclear, or rather chemical weapons into San Francisco Bay. That's a real thing. But to think that they're doing it, again, in the upper atmosphere using fleets of planes is just absurd. You know,
And as far as the bombs go, like, the biggest question is, like, why haven't we seen someone use another one? You know, like that's the biggest question. If I was going to rely on anything and I was that guy, I would say, then how the hell has someone not used one in aggression since 1945?
Well, that's the easiest one to defeat in my mind, though. You know, people talk about the madman principle of Richard Nixon's foreign policy. But at the end of the day, the nation state has to be assumed to be a rational actor. And if you are a rational actor in the rational actor model, that's where mutually assured destruction comes into play. You cannot throw a nuclear weapon at anyone else who has one, and the only opponents worthy of getting nuked are the people who already now have them or have someone else willing to defend them who has them.
Sure. Now, I get that, but like all of our wars because of that have been proxy wars in places that don't have nukes. So you would think that there would have been at least a couple of TAC nukes dropped on one of those countries that doesn't actually have, you know, the ability to defend themselves that way. Not necessarily by us, right? Indian Pakistan is the closest to having another exchange, right? Or the first real exchange because of the structure of their war. But it kind of blows my mind we haven't seen one, you know?
Yeah, well, and there's the argument that MacArthur allegedly wanted to drop a couple in Korea. And he got talked down by the Chinese and the Soviets, supposedly throwing them back if we tried to interfere with Korea in that specific manner. But who knows? I think that's mostly allegation and hearsay, too. Maybe in the documents somewhere. But
I think that's the underlying problem there, right? Is if it doesn't matter who uses it, right? I mean, aside from some non-state actor, right? But if a government drops even a tactical nuke on somebody, the fear of reprisal has to be so great that there's a line of allies on both sides that have hundreds of nuclear warheads ready to go at a moment's notice. So that's where mutually assured destruction comes in. Like, if it doesn't matter how small the payload is, if one gets detonated, like, we're all fucked.
Based on how it ended for him and how it almost has ended for Assad, like, can we safely assume that Gaddafi actually gave his dukes up and didn't have any because of the way he died? And you think you would hit that button on your way out the door if you were about to get sodomized to death?
Well, look, if you want to talk about Gaddafi, I think it had more to do with their gold-backed currency and lack of a central bank than it did nukes. But
oh, yeah, but he knew he was going. So if he had some, I think
Well, if I understand what you're getting at, I think the point you're making is that he gave up the nukes well before they came for him. You know, a couple decades ago?
I think so.
I thought he gave them up to Reagan.
Yeah.
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 Or Bush one of them. Two.
That's all the same person anyway.
So, yeah, I mean, his nukes were long gone when he still thought he was secure. You know, there was no reason not to give them up at that point. Again, it goes back to the rational actor model of statehood, if not the individual.
Since you're someone who really enjoys these sorts of things, I love whenever I can sit around and toy with one of these ideas. And the fact that this one is so poorly presented across the spectrum makes me more mad than it does intrigued.
Yeah. So I guess Are you asking if there's a way to steel man this and make an actual argument for it? Or
no, I'm saying like I think it could have been they could have made it harder to debunk. You know what I mean? Like they could have made it more difficult, and just understand like just a little self awareness. Don't put any Jew stuff in it, man. Like
well, that and don't use they. He used they the entire time. He was like, they have an X-ray machine and they don't. It's like, dude, like what branch are you talking about? Who specifically are you talking about? If you are specific throughout your argument, you are actually bringing up not only like topics and subjects, but like people and organizations tied to that topic, then I'm going to listen. But as soon as you start saying they, I'm like, all right, bro.
So hold on here. A grammatical note in that, in terms of writing, he does mention a specific group. And they then grammatically in the structure of writing is tied to the group that he chose to pin the blame on.
That group just happens to be the Jews.
Yes. So there was a very clear group indicated by they. It's, you know, just how writing works.
Touché. Yeah.
It's you know, left shoulder, right shoulder, the Jews.
It's horrible.
It is terrible.
So, all right, guys.
Yeah, I think if you want to make a real conspiracy out of this, just one second. Yeah. I think the best argument would be that it is all facade structures and that the actual purpose of claiming it exists is as a money laundering system.
Sure.
You know, just another way to feed black budgets. I think that's the best argument for this, but I'm really not a believer.
I see that. Feeds the war machine, right?
Right.
I mean, if he's the military industrial complex and keeps everybody's pockets aligned and fear mongering makes the world go round, at least in the government's eyes.
So do y'all know who controls the warheads, right? What department of the government controls the warheads?
Department of Energy.
That's correct.
Where are you going with
that? At that point, it becomes an institutional way to defend their funding when you wouldn't necessarily need or give them anything else.
Right. And just because of that, I would love to have a picture of Rick Perry riding the bomb Slim Pickens style. Wouldn't that be freaking awesome?
I'll get Texas Tsunami on that.
No, that would be wonderful.
So awesome. All right, guys. Well, I don't have anything else. I think we've sufficiently beat this one to death. If it even had any life to begin with. I think we dug up a dead body and just kicked the shit out of it like the printer on Office Space. So, with that being said, anybody got plugs? Pause? Go ahead.
I'll give the same plugs I always do. Listen to the Gaslight Hour, my show, my home show, rather, I should say, with Ted and Joe. Great times. We just released a new episode recently, the finish of our Trojan Horse review. Look out for me on literally everyone else's shows. Like I said, I get on as many podcasts as I can. I love the, homemade talk radio is the best way to put it.
There you go.
Yep. Check my Twitter profile. That's where all my magic really happens. I'm not active on any other social media. I'm on Keybase now, if other people are or want to be. Pretty cool little place. And I think that's really all I've got for plugs.
Justin, what about you?
I don't have any plugs. Do you have any plugs, Matt?
Nah, man. Like we're here, so
I hope this turns into a podcast that's been forthcoming for a while.
Oh well, if that's what you're getting at, yeah. I mean, you do have a microphone, which is not really plugged in right now and not being used. But at some point, we're going to use that for another podcast. It's going to be awesome and non-political. But
so there's more projects in the work is what you're saying.
This project has been in the works for months. We've had so many phone conversations that have lasted like 3 hours. It's going to be a long form podcast. He just won't fucking record anything.
Buddy, just literally plug it in, open Audacity and hit record. Or, you know, even just have Matt do that. It's easy. Press the record button.
Yeah.
It's coming.
It's going to come. So, you want anybody to follow you on Twitter or no?
No, don't worry about it.
Okay. You can push,
Oh, so I guess there is one more for me. If anyone's clear and doesn't already know this, the Twitter handle I was talking about is @DogmanRespector.
Yes.
@DogmanRespector.
And where can people donate to your Dogman research project?
That is right there. It's the pinned tweet on said Twitter profile.
Boom. All right, Mikey, you got anything?
No, I don't social media at all, really. Life is too busy, bro. But I can barely... it takes a lot of energy for me just to read your tweets. So, say follow Maddie.
Nice. All right. Well, yeah, it's all going to be in the show notes. You know what to do, folks. Thanks for joining us again. Like, subscribe. Go knock on your neighbor's door and shove a copy of this episode in their face. Find some new listeners out there. We'll see.
Tell
them
nukes aren't real, and then explain to them that the Hollywood pedophiles are, though.
Yes. We'll see y'all next week. Peace. Cross a 57 Chevy with a hillbilly band. Had a little honky tonk filled with one night stands. Take a telly on fire with a gonzo steel. In a dark house space just to seal the deal. Yeah, top 40 country, better watch your back, 'cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.